Welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, August the 4th, 1995. In the Creekside Room this morning, our speaker is Kathy Bosch. And we're going to be listening into her continuation of Journey to Wholeness. Today's topic, communicating with eyes, ears, and heart.
I'm a family life educator. With experience in Massachusetts and New York and Ontario and Kentucky and Minnesota and I hope Iowa this next year. Communication, we've been talking about journey to wholeness, and I've put sort of the vehicles that I think are among the ways that we travel. Now, I'm sure some of you may have traveled here just by car, some of you may have traveled various other ways. Paul and I travel to Holden by plane to New York, and then from New York to Seattle, and then by city bus from Seattle to downtown to the Greyhound bus, and from the Greyhound bus to Wenatchee, and my brother's car from Wenatchee up to the boat dock, and then the boat on up here, and then a school bus. So we've got lots of vehicles and ways we move in that journey to wholeness. We've talked about a few of these, and some you'll get from other classes. But we look at our journey that includes our faith, and within our faith, that the important aspect of forgiveness. The IALAC, that's a label that I think we all carry because we are children of God. Even now, we are children of God. As a gentleman in a former course that I did said, I know what that stands for. I'm Lutheran and cuddly. It can be that, too. What about our thinking? What in our thinking affects how we behave, act, feel, respond? And that's what we're going to be dealing with a bit today. How we interpret the actions, the information that we get through our senses and how we think about it. Lead to feelings. Change, that's a scary word for a lot of us. We don't realize how much change has actually already happened in our lives, but we don't really look forward to a lot of change with excitement or enthusiasm. It's scary. It's scary for many. Communication is what we're going to focus on today, and that includes something of what we say to ourselves. What is our own self-talk? How do we look at describing ourselves or describing the problem? So that's a kind of overview of what we're going to be doing in our session today, and I've put a couple of things on the board that we'll be working through as we look at how do we communicate with our eyes, in our ears, in our tongue, as well as with our heart, in our whole body. Communication includes all of us. It's not just words. And in fact, we can put on the board that communication, if I'm not sure whoever came up with this description, but it's I think it's pretty accurate. If we put a percentage, that how we communicate is really made up of about 55% of what you see, even if you don't understand the language, body language, facial expressions, what your hands are doing, what your feet are doing, and what your whole body is doing. 38% is what those words sound like. The 7% are the words, actually. Now, that doesn't mean that we can tell someone to go to hell and they're supposed to feel good about it. In fact, I've heard a description of the word diplomat, that a diplomat is somebody who can tell you to go to hell and you look forward to the journey. How do we understand, and how do we take in? And I'm sure you've all experienced someone who is maybe has a bent toward being sarcastic, and they're always making some kind of put down. And I can remember a family friend of my husband's family who was a supervisor of art education for the Buffalo school system many years ago. He's now dead. And he had a very sarcastic wit. And when we came in with our new firstborn child, and he took a look at her and he said, oh dear, isn't this so sad? But that's okay. I'll find a good place for her in a special education class, and no one will know how retarded she is, and we'll make her... We'll do things so that nobody can guess that she doesn't have it. And you know, I was about ready to melt. I was Well, I've come to realize afterwards not to take a lot of things that this particular fellow said. He had a heart of gold, but he also had a tongue of steel and sharp, very sharp knife. And so my self-talk had to be, don't take anything he says very seriously because you don't know what he really means. And some people are like that. So how do we communicate? And to look at that whole, I mean, his body language was very caring. His words were very cruel. And so I had to take more of the information from the body language than I did from the words and maybe even the tone of voice. So we look at communication and realize that we're all involved in it all day long. Whether we sit there and do nothing, you sit on a swing in your porch and you go, you're communicating something. You're bored, you're mad at something, something isn't going wrong. You haven't said a word, but you're communicating. Or like family member who comes in all disgruntled and really upset and sits down and slouches in a chair and stomps his feet and makes all sorts of grunting noises, and you say, what's wrong? And they say, you know. They have absolutely no cue, but they are convinced that you know everything. It's as if you've got this crystal ball that tells what's going on, and you just direct it at the person, and that gives you the readout on what's happening with that person. Well, unfortunately, we've got computers that can give us readouts, but we don't have them hooked up to crystal balls that can identify and describe and define and analyze what's happening with you. We have to figure some of that out ourselves. And the best way to do that is to do some communication. I want to sort of read a little exercise that comes in the book of how to talk so kids will listen, which is a neat, it's not just a parenting book, but it's a very basic parenting book for a very important ground, setting ground rules and such. But it's also valuable to us as in personal relationships, that a lot of stuff that's in here on importance of feelings and encouragement and cooperation and autonomy and such aren't just limited to children, but across the board. But here's a little exercise, and I want to have you participate in this. Imagine that you're at work, and your employer asked you to do an extra job for that day. The employer wants you to have it ready by the end of the day, and you really mean to take care of it. It's something extra, and you mean to take care of it, but it's one of those terrible, horrible, very bad, no good days that everything is piled, and more of what you really need to get done comes than you ever imagined would come, and you are floored, swamped, overloaded. And you hardly even have time for lunch, and you don't take any coffee breaks. You are just kept going. And finally, it comes to the end of the day, and you're about ready to leave, and your boss comes up and asks for the finished piece of work that was handed to you. And you quickly try to explain what happened and how unusually busy you were and all the basic responsibilities that you had to take care of and how everything else is happening. Your boss interrupts you in a loud, angry voice and shouts, I'm not interested in your excuses. What the hell do you think I'm paying you for? To sit around all day on your butt? As you open your mouth to speak, your employer says, save it, and stomps off toward the elevator to leave. You know that there have been other people around that have heard, although they pretend not to have heard. So you finish gathering your things and you leave the office. And on your way home, you meet a friend. You're still upset, so upset that you find yourself telling your friend what has just taken place. And your friend tries to help you in one of these different ways. And I'm going to go through about seven or eight different ways. And I want you to respond. Remember, you're the person that's been yelled at, embarrassed, humiliated in front of all your coworkers for something that was really out of your hands in a way. It was an extra piece of work. It wasn't one of your real responsibilities. There's no right or wrong feelings. Feelings aren't right or wrong. Feelings are all okay. So how you respond isn't going to be right or wrong. It's just how you feel as you take this role of the person who has just been put down yelled at by an employer. So I say to you now as this friend that you've met on the street and you've just given me a little review of what's happened, and I say, there's no reason to be upset. It's foolish to feel that way. You're probably just tired of blowing the whole thing out of proportion. It can't be as bad as you make out. Come on, smile. Come on, you'll feel much better if you can smile. You look so nice when you smile. How you feel, worker? Friend? You want to punch out? Okay. I want the tape audience to know those were women who bled the punching out arms, not men. Okay. Can come from any part. Anyone else? How do you feel? What do you say you feel?
More
angry. More angry. Sure. There's a couple more sticks thrown on the fire. Even the friend doesn't understand you.
And he's frustrated.
Frustrated. What else?
Ignored.
Didn't even hear what was going on.
I would just make a mention that, like, never to share with that friend that sort of thing again.
Yeah. Forget it.
Surface relationship.
It's not going to be a deep mutual relationship. It's going to be up on the top of pink tea kind of stuff. Okay. Anyone else? You got some feelings there, right? Okay. Now, you've walked along a little bit further and you've met another friend, but you're even angry at what happened before. And the friend looks at you and has a little bit of time, and you say, you tell the story, and the friend says, look, life is like that. Things don't always turn out the way we want. You have to learn to take things in stride. In this world, nothing is perfect. You got to expect some of these days. How do you feel?
Cut off.
Okay. What else? Anyone else? Guilty that your feelings are wrong.
Lectured. By a little girl, a little child. You didn't get it at all, did you?
Okay.
Unimportant.
You're infantilized. Okay. What else? Anything else?
Yeah, you're right, but.
But, okay, now that but comes in. I've always heard that but is like the eraser. It wipes off anything that went before. Okay, so you got some strong feelings about that, and it's still unsettled, right? So that philosophical response or the denial of feelings that happened just earlier didn't really help you deal with it. Okay, how about this? You've walked along, you've seen another friend, and this friend says, you know what I think you ought to do? Tomorrow, go straight to your boss's office and say, look, I was wrong. Then sit right down and finish that piece of work. You might even have to go in a half an hour early. Maybe get it done before you go to his office. Don't get trapped by the little emergencies that come up. And if you're smart and you want to keep that job of yours, you'll make sure that nothing like that ever happens again. You wouldn't feel like laughing, would you? Okay, how would you feel?
That's the end of this friendship.
Yeah, you're not even going to keep that superficial pink tea stuff. You're going to say, cut it.
Who said are you on anyway? What kind of a friend are you?
Yeah, what kind of a friend are you?
It's me profane. I mean, I'm ready to swear quite formally.
Your anger is really built up and you want to let it out. You're not going to swallow it any further. Okay, not feeling very good about that. But that's just advice. Don't we all give advice? Most often. Advice is not a bad thing when you're asked for some advice. Now, what do you think might I do? Instead of saying, you should. Have you ever seen those t-shirts that say, don't should on me? What are some possibilities? I mean, if somebody asks, you might say, well, I suppose there's a variety. Let's do some brainstorming and figure out some possibilities rather than, you should. This is what I'd do if I were you. Okay.
But that's not what you want now.
Yeah, but that's not what I want now. I'm not asking for someone. Okay, here's one that we probably do a lot of time without realizing. So remember, you're still this person that's got this heavy load from your boss. And you meet this friend, and the friend says, what exactly were those emergencies you had that would cause you to forget a special request from your boss? Didn't you realize he'd be angry if he didn't get to it immediately? Has this ever happened before? Well, why didn't you follow him when you left the room and try to explain again? Why did that happen?
I'm pretty stupid. Get some new friends. I don't know if I break the person off, but I think they scrap me being off the stupid.
Okay. Questions, but don't we ask, when somebody tells us something and we ask more questions as if they didn't know enough to tell us the right things, or we got to get deeper into it and we're not sure that that's the whole story and there might be something else that will turn it around. And so we got to probe a little bit further. How about this next one? We do this a lot, particularly with children. I can understand your boss's reaction. He's probably under terrible pressure. What else did you do that got him mad? You're lucky. You're lucky he doesn't lose his temper more often. He's really not such a bad guy. I mean, I met your boss once, and he's really pretty nice. I can't imagine him doing this to you.
I would call you a liar.
Pardon?
You don't work for him.
You don't work for him. You don't really know him.
You've been called a liar now.
Okay, you don't believe me. And is the other person that needs to be defended. Often kids will come home and say something about the teacher at school, and the parent will say, oh, you know you've got a nice teacher. Now, what did you really do? And why did you think you got her mad or him mad? Or, you know, what else haven't you told me? Defending the other person. I'm not important here. The person who isn't here is the person that's important. You've got to protect them for whatever reason. How about pity? Oh, you poor thing. That's terrible. I feel so sorry for you, I could just cry.
Well, that's the others. That's a lot better. Thank you, Noah, for that. All along, I was waiting for that. That is not what a jerk he is.
It's a little closer, but it's still...
Satisfy
me.
Yeah, we feel a little bit better because somebody's at least thinking about me, but then I'm a victim. Yeah. I'm not a survivor, I'm a victim. How about this one? Plain amateur psychoanalysis. Has it ever occurred to you that the real reason why you're so upset is that this is because this employer resents a parent figure in your life? As a child, you probably worried about displeasing your parent, and when your boss scolded you, it brought back those early fears of rejection. Now, isn't that true? Don't you think that's right?
It may be right, but that's not what you want to hear.
You don't even want to deal with that part of it because there's so much first. I mean, it's like digging into the bottom of the sack and you haven't even opened it yet. How about this one? Boy, that sounds like a rough experience. To be subjected to an attack like that in front of other people, especially after having had such a busy day and being under so much pressure. That must have been pretty hard to take.
That's right, huh?
That's good.
That feels a little bit better than the pity even?
Yeah.
You're heard. It was a rough day. You heard, the other person heard that you were under pressure. The other person heard it wasn't fun. It was embarrassing. Especially to have coworkers here.
Another thing you might say at the end of that is something I said to a friend of mine who kind of got called on the carpet for something he hadn't done. I said, well, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah. And I'm glad you said it in the way you did. I might say it after. So that first you might want to let the other person know that you heard them. And you're checking out if those are really the experiences that they had, and then the person can either affirm them or correct them. They can verify or clarify. No, I didn't feel that way. Or, yeah, I did. Or, you did understand, you did hear. And you're not asking me a bunch of whole questions, and you're not telling me what to do about it. You're just attending to me and the feelings I have. So, we want to look a bit at recognizing that we have those feelings, and that what happens, the kind of information that we take through from our senses, what we hear, what we see, touch, taste, and smell comes in there sometime, but not all the time, but hearing and seeing, that we sort of interpret it and we have some thoughts about it. Those thoughts then bring on some feelings. That's part of a kind of an awareness wheel. There are some feelings that come to it. And as a result of how we think about it. And that's what why it's important to be aware of what our self-talk is. Do we tend to put ourselves down? Do we tend to say, wait a minute, let's see what's really going on? Or do we go on automatic and some strings are pulled from some of our past experiences, and that's the way always people are always putting down, nobody likes me, everybody hates me, guess I'll go eat some worms. You know that old song?
Mm-hmm.
Or, how dare somebody do that to me? I'm not going to take it, or I'm going to respond back, or, well, let me think about this for a while so that I can interpret more of what's happening and come up with, what do I really want? What's going on? And how then might I choose my actions? Remember, feelings aren't right or wrong. It's actions that are judged, and we have choice on how we choose to act on those feelings. Now, we've done some of the roadblocks that I put along the side. I didn't do name calling, but I could have. Did a little blaming, not listening. There were some put downs, certainly denying feelings. There was advice given when it wasn't asked for. Questions without acknowledging what I did say or checking out what I did say, but wanting more information and deepening it. Defending the other person.
Is that something you could do as sort of a second stage? You know, it's like, you know, as Gabe said, you know, that was terrible, and you're sitting there having your beer, you know, as part of the conversation, then do you think that's appropriate at that point to say, okay, now, you know, what else happened here?
Well, it might depend upon how the friend who's telling the story, the friend who really owns that problem, is feeling. If the friend says, I'm going to wipe that off, I don't want to talk anymore about it, you certainly might want to respect that person's need at that particular time. The person is still going on. I think there's still a time, and I might put it farther down the line than second. And I would put maybe at least 1, 2, and 3, you know, trying to check out feelings. Let the other person empty. Faber and Maeslisch have also written another book that's called Siblings Without Rivalry. And it's one of the titles of their chapters that I think is a good byword to think about. And one is, not until the bad feelings come out can the good feelings come in. So not until that friend of yours has dumped all the feelings that have happened and whatever they want to say about it, are they going to be able to really hear anything that you're saying? So to ask the questions or to give advice and do that at that point while they're still filled with frustration and embarrassment and whatever else those feelings are, and it could be a variety of them, they're not going to be ready to say, well, what can I learn from this? But they may have to just deal with that and then before they can go on the next step.
One of the things I'm noticing is, what you're saying is, we don't need to be Mr. Fix-It.
Right, very good. That's the bottom line. And if you were in Brad Beano's class yesterday afternoon on the codependent, you know, sometimes we just have to be there. And I guess I probably fit into that category a lot. I want to fix things. And as he said, pastors and people within the helping profession, which is part of my professional background, you know, we probably have chosen our profession because we want to be there with people and fix. And we can't really fix things until people ask your participation. They have to invite you in. And, you know, there's a lot of times with our daughters, I want to go and solve all their problems, and I can't do it. And I mean, it's fortunate that I live 10 and 12 hours away from each one of them. And this last year, when we were only 45 minutes away from one of our daughters, I found that my codependent needs could be met in a much more practical way, and I took the role of the Jewish mother. This coming year is her 10-year decision year, so she was busy writing. She teaches at the University of Kentucky. And I offered to do her laundry. We would see her about once a week, so I'd take her laundry for that week and bring it back the next week, which I didn't have to interfere in her life, but I did take maybe an hour of work out of her day. Or whenever we went to her apartment, I'd wash her dishes, take another 15, 20 minutes out of her week. But it didn't have to interfere with her, you know, are you doing this? And I would just say, you know, I need to do something. And I wasn't working the first half of the year that we were there, so that this filled in that something. You can do them all, whatever way you want to, you know. So there might be other ways to fill that codependent need when you feel that you want to participate in some way. It's also helpful to remember what are often roadblocks, what may be, and as many of you responded, you know, I'm not going to be very deep with that person again. I'll just deal with superficial things, or even to the other extreme, well, that person is just not going to be one of my friends. I'm not going to spend much time with them because they just don't seem to be concerned about me, concerned about the other person, or whatever. So defending another, that kind of overwhelming pity that may even add to my feeling of being the victim rather than being a survivor, or, you know, finding a way to resolve the problem. And back in the 60s, the hippies had a saying that I think is still acceptable today, and that is that you can't take a bath for your grandmother. Right? Can you take a bath for your grandmother? Or your mother? Or your partner? Or your child? You each have to take our own bath. You might help them, but you can't do it. You can't take it for them. So, to take over another's responsibility, to take over solving all their problems, or feeling that you have the responsibility to solve their problems without being invited in, sets up some roadblocks in this journey to wholeness, the journey to wellness. Amateur psychoanalysis, the reason why, and this must be underneath it all, and have you thought about, it's not so helpful. And sometimes the less we know about a subject, the more we become a specialist on it, and we end up in greater problems. So we can maybe refer them to somebody who can do some therapy with them rather than trying to, if that at some long point seems to be the final bottom line. But I don't think you can ever discover that in the first 20 words, first 5 minutes even. Sarcasm, ridicule, embarrassment. Teens seem, and a lot of young adults up from the teens seem to have a corner on the market. If you listen to a lot of their language, it's very sarcastic. There's a lot of ridicule. There's a lot of put downs. And sometimes we never get out of that stage. We are like the family friend who started to talk about our daughter as being the retarded person. She's the one that teaches at the University of Kentucky.
Andrew, some things on this list might be appropriate at certain times, like advice, for instance, if you ask for.
Yeah, and that's why I put some of the qualifications when it's not asked for. Questions, the why, when you haven't heard enough, when you really need to hear more of what they want to say, rather than interjecting. And sometimes your why questions take you off on this road when they're really going off on this road.
But my point is this. A thing like sarcasm is probably never helped.
Yeah. Yeah. And name calling, put downs, denying feelings are probably never helpful.
I can think of a friend that I had. He's dead now. But we had a good relationship, I think, in my post-adolescent years, 20, 25 years old. But looking back now, boy, almost everything in our conversation was a humorous put down or a humorous sarcasm.
Mm-hmm. And you think it's funny.
And I regret that now. I mean, we had good times together, but we were always needling each other. And I look back at that and I think, boy, there was something very hostile in all of that.
Yeah, and it's like, if you happen to be a Democrat and you have some good Republican friends, you might be constantly needling them and happening, or the other way around. And that may not always be helpful to a relationship either. Threatening. I'm not sure. Threatening may fall into that category also of not seldom ever being helpful. Because you don't know how people are going to respond to that threatening. We'll get to some conflict resolution in a bit, and that might be a better way to go than to, if you don't do this, if it's, you know, it's my way or the highway. And most often that word if is a red flag that goes up. It's a kind of threat. If I do it, what'll you do? And if I don't do it, what will you do? There's always this, the dichotomy and the whole range in between, and so it's that threat is a challenge to a lot of people. Yes?
In all of them, not in all of them, there are some that I can see you never apply to this, but in some of these things, would it depend on the relationship between the two parties? You know, if you have an understanding relationship, if you understand each other, if you have a kind of a feeling together. An example I might think of is, and I've seen this happen, people that have just a really close understanding relationship, and we'll use the new baby, they have this obviously adorable, beautiful child, and the other one will say, oh, too bad you have such an ugly baby, and it's understood what's meant there.
Yeah.
You know?
I have another example on the other side of that. One of my roommates at university was a gal who started to get prematurely gray even before I did. Now, we said there must be something in the water here because we were both in, you know, our 19s, 20, and we were both getting gray. But she got gray even quicker than I did. She also married her lab instructor at some years later, who ended up being vice president of the University of Minnesota at some point later in his career. So she really was upscale. And she had very white hair, and they got married somewhat later in life, had children later. So she had preschoolers, toddlers, when she was in her later 30s. And this was at a time when people didn't, I mean, this is 35 years ago, when people didn't have children in their late 30s and 40s. And she said, when I would go to when I'd have one of these busy mornings and the kids were really fussy and somebody was sick and there had been all this kind of stuff going on and all sorts of responsibilities to do and I just had not attended to myself and I looked pretty ragged and I'd go to the front door and the kids would be hanging around my legs and the furnace repairman would come and say, oh, I see you're babysitting your grandchildren today. And I'd go, thunk. And at first I used to really declare, you know, these are my children, and I just get so angry, and afterwards I just not even respond to the question. But if I went to that same thing happened, I went to the door and I just had my hair done that day, and somebody, and I'd walk in the grocery store with my two children, and somebody would say, oh, isn't it nice you're taking your grandchildren out shopping? I could respond very differently, whether I'm feeling up or whether I'm feeling down. So I think it might be helpful to switch that relationship around and find something else that's not personal to be funny about. And sometimes you don't know how that person is going to take it and whether they're up or whether they're down. And it may just add more fuel to the fire for being down. And it's like these kind of jokes that if
put down birthday cards, put down Valentine's.
Yeah, that's a kind of put down. And then somebody says, oh, come on, laugh. Can't you take a joke? It's and then they try to explain. And I really feel that if you have to explain a joke as not being being sarcastic, then it really was meant to be sarcastic.
Well, one of the guys I used to work with, our company we were working for got bought out. And they brought in an old boss, and his whole mission in life was to chew on anybody who worked there. anyway, one day, when I got feeling pretty low, come down, and I said, well, what did old Bonehead have to say today? And it just kind of lightened him up. Because it was he needed that humor back.
Yeah, and, you know, if Bonehead wasn't sitting behind the next door hearing you say that, and you end up with having...
I was that guy didn't care if he heard me, because I told him he was Bonehead to his face once.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
That isn't sarcastic, it's honest.
Yeah, there may be some different...
Well, a certain person, too, right? I mean, you're talking about somebody who's not there.
Yeah.
In most cases.
I'm not calling you Bonehead.
No, I would, but...
I'm calling him Bonehead.
Yeah.
To you.
Yeah.
And I think...
And that's different.
Yeah. And we want to look at, is it important to build up that relationship, or does the relationship not matter? And do we say things directly, Or do we, how do we find a sense of humor? And humor is certainly relieving a lot of stresses, as long as it's something we can both laugh at, and
well,
it's not
a
put down.
Men are talking in our society, males.
Mm-hmm.
I showed affection to my friend, he showed affection to me by needling all the time. We couldn't say, I like you, much less I love you. But we could needle each other and be sarcastic and play jokes at each other's expense.
Yeah, and
I regret that.
Paul had open heart surgery some years ago. And it was at a time that his parents were with us right after Thanksgiving. And his father, who was a pastor, said, oh, well, I think you ought to call the bishop, who was in Syracuse, where we were living at the time. And I said, no, I don't think I want to, because the bishop had one of these sarcastic sense of humor. And he would say, well, what did he do to sort of get, I mean, was he out? And he would make a comment about bringing it on himself. So I waited a while, and I finally calmed down a bit, and I called him, and I said, you know, my father-in-law said I should have called you a little bit earlier to tell you this, but I wasn't really ready to deal with it because, and I explained that I thought his response would have been a kind of sarcastic put-down of Paul. And he was taken back by this, and 2 days later I got a letter in the mail saying, I'm really sorry that that was how you perceived me, and I feel that, you know, that we, that he and Paul had this relationship that they could needle one another. But I can, he said, but I can see that somebody else seeing it from another side would take it in a different way, and I apologize for having set that up, and I want you to know. And he was very, my opinion really raised of him for having come back and shared that with me. And he was very supportive.
You know, oftentimes that happens amongst contemporaries in some equal
role,
because that's one way of saying I got you. One up on you.
That kind of one-upmanship, sure.
Yeah.
That's a good point to bring out. And how do we, you know, do we have to be one up to be okay? Or, you know, can we all be on that level and still be okay? We're going to deal more with some self-esteem issues tomorrow in our journey to wholeness. So if we, let's go on a little bit. If these are roadblocks that do not help us on that journey to wholeness and on in a positive relationship, how else can we? Well, let's look at some listening with care. To give attention, I've done an exercise with a group before, and I'm not sure we have that time right now. But I do want, you know, if we share with each other some of the things that are helpful on when you really feel listened to, and there are times when you feel listened to, and at times I can write that off, they didn't hear a word that I said. So if we think about what lets us know that I've been heard, that somebody else is listening to me, or that I'm listening to somebody else, well, I give some eye attention. As I do an exercise, I often tell one of the partners to count the number of flies flying around in the room while they're supposedly listening to the other person tell some good news story. And I give them 30 seconds, and many of them I want to stop talking after 15. 30 seconds isn't very long. But they're so frustrated after 15 of being ignored that they've stopped already. So we want some attention that says, yeah, I'm not writing the grocery list, I'm not writing the sermon for next Sunday, I'm not thinking of what I'm going to say when I meet my boss or to the students or whatever, but I'm listening to you.
I'm not even preparing my agenda for when you finish talking.
Yeah, so often listening is interpreted as I'm thinking of how I'm going to respond when you stop talking. And it really needs to deal with you. Now, if I'm the one that's the person who had the boss that yelled at me, I would hope you could listen to me, because I'm the one that owns a problem that we're dealing with right now. You don't own it, but I just need some support that says, hey, you're still okay, even with this problem. So, do you know what a friendly grunt is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right? Okay, and even that, you know, rather than saying, why? Well, what did you do? Well, this is what I think you ought to do. It might be better to just plain listen with friendly grunts. Mm-hmm. wow. Okay, yeah. Sure. Ooh. You know, depending upon how you get the feelings. Something's still missing in that. And so we may then want to connect with the feelings. Remember that final response, the person who gave the empathic response and said, boy, that sounds like a rough experience. You must have felt quite embarrassed. Especially, that was pretty hard to take. To tune into the feelings, and what are the feelings about? What's the content?
And trying to put a name, maybe, to the other person's feeling.
Yeah.
And the other person may not even be able to name that feeling, and you can help by putting a name to that feeling.
Yeah. It reminded me of a time I was teaching a course on effectiveness training for women. And we'd gone through 10 weeks, and then we had agreed to come back a couple of times for a review a month or two later. And one of the women in the group was had been a surgical nurse for many years. She was a woman probably in her mid-30s, later 30s at the time. And she had decided she wanted to make a change. And so in that interim, she had been changed to obstetrics. And she was, we were doing some listening exercises, and I was her partner, and we were doing that as an exercise in front of the group, and she was telling me about her new job. And as she was telling me about the new job, something came in from what I recalled her saying in the weeks, it was a 10-week program before, that she did not have any children. And she was saying, I was really excited about this job, and the first couple of weeks I was on it, I was just ecstatic, and now I'm really feeling I'm not in the right place. That for the joy has just gone out of this. And I don't know what's wrong because I was really looking forward to it. And what came across to me was, it sounds like you wished you were one of the women that was delivering the child. And she broke out in tears and she said, that's what I've been not wanting to admit to myself. You know, to what is the feeling about, you know, feeling left out, feeling wanting to join the group. So you might check out some of that. No, I could have been completely off the wall, and she had said, no, I'm just so glad when I realize what they all go through that this is not something I want to join in.
Is there a danger there of false amateur psychoanalysis?
Yeah, well, there's always that stuff.
Yeah. Well, the kind of feeling that she was saying was, and I could have been, and she could have corrected, and we had had enough of a relationship and enough time together that she could have said, no, I just, you know, that's really not it. But it turned out to be something that was part of her. And you can always check it out or use feedback. Other people call it active listening, reflective listening. And it goes, particularly when the other person owns the problem. It's not, when I listen, if I were in the situation of listening to the friend telling about the boss's explosion, I don't have any participation in that as the boss or the person who experienced it or even as one of the coworkers who heard about it and was embarrassed. I'm on the outside and I'm listening to the person dump her feelings, his feelings. So I don't own any part of that problem. It's not affecting me. It's not something that I've participated in. It's not something that's going to cause or damage anything that surrounds me. So when another person owns a problem, I can support the person and not have to deal with the problem and not have to be that rescuer. But I can be supportive to the person. So I may check out, I may feedback. Now,
that's different than psychoanalyzing too, because this is just, what's the feeling and what's it immediately connected to?
I'm not telling.
It's not going back to second or third causes in childhood or grandparents or whatever.
Yeah. And so we're dealing with the here and now. We're dealing with what we see through the eyes, what we're hearing through the ears, what we're sort of feeling within us and within the other person. So that's some of that listening with care. And that part of that listening with care also has to deal with our self-talk. If we have had some experiences of our own, we may say, well, I have, you know, that same thing happened to me, and then all of a sudden you're off running with the story, and they're left there alone. So we don't want to take the platform away from them. You can hold back your own story until sometime later. And that doesn't mean you give them one response, or you give them two responses, and then you sort of start running with a similar story. But you really listen them out until they've sort of calm down or said, let's not deal with this. Or they say, you know, I don't know what I ought to do tomorrow. And you might say, well, what have you thought? Instead of saying, well, I think you ought to do A, B, C, and D, to throw the question back to them, what ideas have you come up with? Haven't you ever been in a situation where somebody has a problem and they say, well, what would you do about it? And all of a sudden you say, well, I'd do this. And they, no, I couldn't do that. And then you give another suggestion. No, that would be impossible because of this. You give another. Everything you suggest, they knock down because they're not willing to have you solve the problem. They really want to be the problem solver. And so to be that supportive person, that supportive friend, that listener, we can turn it back. Well, what ideas do you have? Let's throw out some, and you might do some brainstorming that can be from the ridiculous to the sublime. Well, I guess you could put a note around yourself saying, I'm not for yelling at. I mean, you can be find some humor in some other things. When I own the problem, if I want to switch over to that other side for a minute, it's not helpful, and that's a kind of underneath sign in our roadblocks in our journey. It's not helpful to begin to label the other person. You're always so sensitive. You always take things so seriously. You always get yourself into trouble. If we attack the other person, we're not helping the situation. And so the kind of you statement that may fit in with that blaming or name-calling or the denying feelings is also a kind of roadblock. But instead, we want to look at that traffic light, and the go signal might be to speak for yourself, I feel. And when I have a problem, I need to own that problem and say, Mary, when I hear you, or Mary, I really feel let down by your decision not to keep the secret, keep this the plan for the party or whatever a secret from so and so for a little bit. I need to know that when we agree on something, you'll follow through on it, or you'll be honest with me. If you can't keep the agreement that we made, let me know. So an I message is speaking for myself. I'm not saying, you're the worst kind of friend I ever heard. You're always spilling the beans. You can never keep a secret. You always ruin things. Don't you know how to keep your mouth shut? It's a lot of roadblocks I put in there. It's not going to help the situation very much. But if I can say what I feel and what I see as the problem, define the problem, and what I need, I'm not putting you down. I'm letting you know where I am. And if we need to then go into conflict resolution, we've got a starting point. I haven't added more fuel to the fire to get your anger up and to put you down and be sarcastic and set up a whole bunch of roadblocks in front of you. But I've given us a go signal to say, hey, we've got a problem. How can we work on it? And I'm sorry I didn't, my bookshelves were in transition this summer as we were getting ready to come here, and that when I fill out the form, I didn't think about this little book for the bookstore, but I think it's, you know, Fighting Fair for Families. It comes out of Peaceworks, which is out of, where is the address on it? Miami Beach, Florida, Peace Education. And this is a neat little book, Fighting Fair for Families, but it's a very basic one. Rules for Fighting Fair Works, When Anger Flares, Cool Down. There's a time and a place for dealing with the issue, the kind of you messages using caring language, something about listening with an open mind, identify the problem, focus on the problem, brainstorm for solutions, enlighten up, be a mediator, and here's how. There's some very basics that, whether it's with using with children or just the simplification of not having to go through 350 pages of a bigger book, for some of the basics on how we can improve that relationship and be on our journey to wholeness. That when we have a problem, and sometimes we can agree to disagree. I may never convince you that smoking is not good for your health or my health. You might just be very addicted to it and say, you know, that's the way I live. We may have to agree to disagree, that you will agree to smoke outside of my presence or outside of my breathing space, but that our relationship can still go on. So there may be that may be one level of dealing with the problem. We may have to make a good decision. Well, what are we going to do in this situation? And I think that's the next step up. If a decision is not made, you may end up with a problem, and that's another step higher, a little bit more complicated. And if that problem is not solved, then you really get into a conflict. It's a higher level of emotion and a higher level of seriousness. But whether it's a problem or whether it's a decision or whether it's a conflict, we really need to focus on the issue, on the problem, and not the person. Not to label you, not to say you're always the one that's wrong, but this is an issue we need to figure out. This is a problem we have. And I think, you know, give that support. We can do it. You know, think back to a time when you did manage to solve a problem that was really important at that time, and to build from, well, we were able to resolve this. You can bring up the past if it's supportive. Don't bring up the past as an issue of things never work out. You always have this problem. This always happens. Well, always 60 minutes out of every hour, 24 hours out of every day, 7 days out of every week, 30 to 31 days out of every month. Always? Not really. So focus on the problem, not the person. And we need to go back to focusing, as we did with our listening and recognizing our roadblocks. What are the needs and what are the feelings? And I may have some strong feelings about this issue. What are your feelings about this issue? What are some of your needs? And that goes back to this I message. What do I need? What do I feel? To be able to share that with the other person. And that we both have feelings and needs. It's not one way. It's not you listen to me now and then we're going to solve it. But okay, I feel, I need, I want. Now, what are some of your feelings and some of your needs? And can I listen? And can I then reflect back? Check on the feelings. Can I check out the needs that I understand them? Only after we really know what the feelings and needs are, can we then begin to brainstorm for options. You know, if we start deciding, well, why don't you do this and why don't you do that, or why we could do this, and we don't know what the real feelings and needs are, we're completely missing the majority of the problem. We may be solving something else, but not the real issue. So, in the sequence, we need to get in touch with what's, and we often hide our feelings, or we don't think we dare share them with somebody else because they may be right, or they may be wrong. And we need to remind ourselves feelings aren't right or wrong. Feelings just are. They're a part of you. How we choose to act on them is what becomes judged. And so we need to recognize the feelings and then think of what our choices are. To brainstorm options and then evaluate them. Now, if you're deciding to go to this movie or that movie, you may not do it in all those steps. You can say, well, how about this one? I really feel like something fun tonight and not serious and not blood and guts. Or, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good, so I'll be able to take a kind of drama that's looks at human life rather than something that's funny. And you can put these two together. And to choose on the basis of evaluating, if we do this, what would happen? If we do that, what would happen? Or I would feel very uncomfortable about this. I feel this is unfair to me, or unfair to you, or unfair to somebody else, or this is going to cause more problems than it'll solve. To evaluate, we need to recognize that for each choice there's a consequence, positive, negative, to choose. And this is not voting, so if you've got three people who are involved in the problem, two people can win against the other person. But it's consensus. You know, is there something here that we can all agree to, feel somewhat comfortable with, to keep trying? And if you find that there's no agreement, we better come back, we better think about this and come back again. Because we want to find a way that we have a win-win solution. Nobody loses. Often we get into a problem with conflict resolution and we stop right there. Okay, this is what we're going to do. Fine, go. And we don't know who's going to do what, when, where, and how, or why even. So we need to plan. What's your responsibility? What am I going to do? What are you going to do? And if it's a real serious issue and it's something that's happened over again, we might do a kind of outline. Okay, I'm going to do this by. And what will you need to do? And when, so that it's a reminder to us. Maybe I just do it for my own self as a reminder. What did I agree to? What did you agree to? So I don't come back and say, you said you were going to, and you never, you always. And then we're back into another conflict again. So if we've got it clear, what I'm to do and what you're to do, there's a lot stronger likelihood that we'll resolve the conflict. And somebody won't be saying, well, you didn't tell me. I don't know. I forgot. And we don't take self-responsibility then. So plan. Who's going to do what? Maybe by when? Maybe even where? Maybe even how, if that's necessary. And then how long are we going to try this? Try it for a week? A day? Till after supper? Through the month? You know, how are we? So we can come back and check, is it working? How will we know if we're successful? So you can pat each other on the back and say, hey, look, this is working. And give yourself encouragement, support. And even if part of it works and part of it doesn't, to say, hey, look, this is really working out. We found success in this. Now, what can we do to help this along a little bit better rather than focusing on what isn't and forgetting what is? So we want to be able to give encouragement and support for what is working, and that will help what isn't working come along a little bit better and more positively. As we talk about communication, my favorite cartoon, where did it go? Here. And that we need to remember so we don't fall into this particular kind of situation. Here, do you know the Born Loser comic? Here's the boss, and he's saying to the loser, join me for a bit of one-on-one basketball at the club. And the loser says, you're on. And as the boss leaves, the boss says, see you at noon. And oh, don't forget, we're rubber sole sneakers only. It's the rule. So, what is the born loser here? But here he is going into the gym, saying, weird rule. Only has sneakers on. Well, what are we really hearing? And might it not be better sometimes to just check it out? Only rubber sole sneakers? You've got to be kidding. Or let me just close with this one. This is from Irma Bombeck, and about communication. And she says, on TV the other day, a leading child psychologist said parents should treat their children as they would treat their best friend, with courtesy, dignity, and diplomacy. I've never treated my children any other way, I told myself. But later that night, I thought about it. Did I really talk to my best friends like I talked to my children? Just suppose that our good friends, Fred and Eleanor, came to dinner one night and... Well, it's about time you two got here. What have you been doing, dawdling? Leave those shoes outside, Fred. They've got mud on them. And shut the door. Were you born in a barn? So, Eleanor, how have you been? I've been meaning to have you over for such a long time. Fred, take it easy on that chip dip or you'll ruin your dinner. I didn't slave over a hot stove all day to have you nibble like some bird. Heard from any of the gang lately? Got a card from the Martins. Yes, they're down in Lauderdale again. They go every year to the same spot. What's the matter with you, Fred? You're fidgeting. Of course you've got to go. Look at all that punch you've drunk. It's down the hall, first door on the right, and I don't want to see a towel in the middle of the floor when you're finished, and flush.